Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Elizabeth Wydra, who is the Chief Counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Centre, a think tank law firm and action centre dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution supports progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the Federal Courts of Appeals. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elizabeth Wydra.
It's great to be with you.
And you were in the Supreme Court yesterday hearing the arguments over whether or not corporations can opt out of the Affordable Care Act's mandate on providing contraceptives to the female employees. There's a great concern that this ruling, if it goes in favor of the Hobby Lobby Christian company and the Mennonite company, whose position is a little more limited but nevertheless similar, that this could open a Pandora's box that could be catastrophic.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, this case is an important case about contraception and women's access to health care in the particular case, but it is much more than just about contraception. If Hobby Lobby prevails on its claim that it can use the religious beliefs of the individuals who own the company to exempt a commercial enterprise from laws that apply to everyone else, then we could see companies trying to avoid paying for important treatments like vaccinations, blood transfusions, stem cell treatments, and then even beyond healthcare, companies trying to exempt themselves from crucial anti-discrimination laws that require treating women and men equally and require equal treatment of gay men and lesbians. So while the case itself is important just on its own facts, when you think about the possible implications, then this is a really, really big deal.
So in terms of what you just mentioned, Elizabeth Wydra, about gay and lesbian rights being infringed by if this ruling goes in favor of Hobby Lobby, we already had an example of that in Arizona where a law was vetoed by the governor, even though she had a part in promulgating it in the first place. It resulted in a great deal of pressure from the business community, but it would seem to me to be a perfectly logical analogy to this case before the Supreme Court with Hobby Lobby, and that law in Arizona is making its way through various legislatures across the country. So if the Supreme Court opens the door, surely we'll have businesses can discriminate on the personal political beliefs of their owners to customers and to the world at large.
Absolutely. And there's actually already a case that's working its way up to the Supreme Court out of New Mexico. There was a wedding photographer who refused to take photographs for gay couples' weddings. So this is already happening, and they refused to do so on the basis of their religious beliefs. So this is something that's already happening, and, you know, it isn't just something that's abstract or hypothetical. It's something that we should be concerned about. And, you know, that's just not the way that the law has worked, and it shouldn't be the way that it works in the future. But I got to say, after sitting there and listening to the arguments, I am really concerned that there might be a majority of justices on the Supreme Court who are going to vote that way.
And how much did the law that was signed by Bill Clinton, which was mentioned on a number of times in the hearings before the Supreme Court, how much do you think that has given them cover in terms of those that might well rule in favor of Hobby Lobby?
Well, you know, there's never been in the history of the United States an instance in which a commercial enterprise like Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood, the other company, its cabinet maker, there's never been an instance in our nation's history in which a commercial enterprise has gotten an exemption from a generally applicable law that would burden the rights of others. So there is no cover for the Supreme Court to do this, but that doesn't mean that they won't. You know, and they actually pushed back against the Solicitor General's argument when he pointed out that there has never been a case in which the court has done this, essentially saying that, you know, well, this could be the first one. And so there's no support in Supreme Court precedent. There's no support in our constitutional tradition for allowing our principles of religious liberty to be used in this way, especially when they would burden the rights and liberties of third parties. I mean, even if you think about the facts of this case, Hobby Lobby has, you know, about 13,000 employees across the country, and we're talking about a statutorily granted right that the women employees have to the full range of FDA-approved contraception. And just because they work for Hobby Lobby or Conestoga Wood, it doesn't mean that they checked their personal rights, their liberty, at the door of the workplace.
Again, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Wydra, who's the chief counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank, law firm, and action center dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution supports progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the Federal Courts of Appeals. And the Religious Freedoms Restoration Act that I referred to, obviously it did come up. But the other thing that came up in these arguments was it seems that Plan B is what's got some of the conservative justices upset. And that's the argument that seemed to have been made, that somehow Plan B and IUDs are a form of abortion. What was your reading on that kind of argument and its implications? Because that, yeah, you know, so Plan B was tested. It took forever to get that drug on the market. It's proven incredibly effective and incredibly safe. They fought that tooth and nail. And you know, what we feel, a lot of people feel about this case is that we thought the Affordable Care Act was settled by the Supreme Court. Now the doors are opened, and now they're having another shot at Plan B by the look of it.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because the particular contraceptives being challenged are ones that the business owners believe prevent implantation of a fertilized egg, which they consider to be equivalent to abortion. That's not the way that federal law defines abortion. And in fact, the science on whether or not these forms of contraception actually prevent implantation of a fertilized egg at best is ambiguous, but I think you could even probably go further, and some of the medical groups that filed friend of the court briefs in the court went further to say that, you know, they don't actually prevent implantation of a fertilized egg. But the Solicitor General raised a really good point in the argument when the justices, some of the more conservative justices, made the point that this case is about abortion. He said, you know, there are more than 2 million women across the country who use IUDs, and I don't think that they consider themselves to be engaging in abortion. And I think that's an important reality check, because having the full range of FDA-approved contraception covered by the Affordable Care Act, allowing all of those forms of contraception to be available to women without a copay, is important because that allows the woman and her doctor to come up with what is going to be the safest and most effective form of contraception for her. And in many cases, that will be an IUD, which is generally shown to be much more effective and much safer than some other forms of contraception. But the IUD also happens to be the most expensive, with an upfront cost that is higher than other forms. And so if that form isn't covered but other forms of contraception are, then studies show, and it's frankly just common sense, that the cost differential will drive the decision and not necessarily what is best for the health of that woman and in the best interest of her and her family.
But in general, this whole case feels like the pot calling the kettle black. If you take the Arizona case against not serving gays in restaurants because of the restaurant's owner's religious beliefs, who's imposing what on who? The religious right is arguing that homosexuals are imposing their lifestyle simply for being alive, for being who they are. I mean, their very presence apparently is an imposition of their lifestyle, according to that logic. But on the other hand, it seems so much more clear to me, at least, that these are people who are imposing their religious beliefs on the rest of us. And the idea that you could destroy the Affordable Care Act or gut it, an important part of it, based upon the religious feelings of one or two companies in the United States is pretty preposterous.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that it really does turn on its head the idea of religious liberty, to say that you can have the a business entity, which has never been understood to share in the protection of religious freedom in the same way that living, breathing individuals do. But to have that corporation be able to impose religious beliefs on employees who may have very different views and are entitled to have different views. You know, these companies, as opposed to like a church or a synagogue or a more explicitly religious organization, they don't hire on the basis of religion. They don't have an exemption from the federal anti-discrimination laws that require companies to hire without regard to religion. And so there are lots of people who are going to work there who don't share in the religious beliefs of the Green family that owns Hobby Lobby. But you're absolutely right that if the court rules in favor of Hobby Lobby, it will amount to the Green family, the owners of Hobby Lobby, being able to impose their religious beliefs on the employees. And that goes squarely against Supreme Court precedent, which has clearly said that the limitations that a person personally accepts on his conduct as a result of his religious faith cannot be imposed when you voluntarily enter into the commercial sphere. It cannot be imposed on others. That's just not the way that things work. If you don't want to, if you want to be a business owner, you have to apply by generally applicable laws, especially when the rights of others are involved. You know, if you want to take those limitations on your own conduct as a result of your faith, that's great. And in fact, you're protected in your ability to do that. But it really does turn the idea of religious freedom on its head to say that a corporation can then turn around and, you know, when you expected to show up for work to sell craft supplies, instead you're checking your religious liberty at the workplace door.
But doesn't this fly in the face of there shall be no religious test? I mean, isn't that fundamental in our Constitution?
Well, there is. So the First Amendment protects religious free exercise, and it also protects against government establishment of religion. Right. And there have been arguments, and Justice Ginsburg raised this point in oral argument yesterday, that if the government allows Hobby Lobby to do this, could that raise a problem under the Establishment Clause? Could that be implicating the idea that by the government allowing religious people who own for-profit entities to opt out of these laws, could that be establishing religion? And so that's something that's on the table and that the court is going to have to grapple with.
Well, one of the things that, to my mind, or at least my understanding, Elizabeth Wider, that restricts corporations from imposing their personal and religious beliefs on their customers, and to some extent, Domino's Pizza, the guy that runs that, is a very fundamentalist Catholic, and he's even built a kind of Truman Show little town down in Florida, you know, the perfect little Christian community. But even he's restrained because he knows that he wants to sell to as many customers as possible. The same applies to our convention in the press, where you always have to have the Republican argument and then the Democratic argument. In the universe of discourse, there's only two black and white opinions, and that comes out of not out of fair and balanced, as Fox News likes to say. That comes out of the fact that the owners of the media know that half of their readers and television viewers are either Democrats or Republicans. So in order not to offend either, we have this kind of bland approach to politics and news and the coverage of politics. So you can see how we've been restrained by logic, by a kind of commercial logic on the part of corporate owners. But I take it with Hobby Lobby and perhaps the Mennonite Company, they're not so much restricted because most of their customers are like-minded. Are they living in a little Christian bubble? Is that what's going on here?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if that's their customer base. You know, people are free to conduct their businesses differently in many ways. But when they run up against laws that require a different course of conduct, then their business practices have to yield to those generally applicable laws in most instances. So, for example, Hobby Lobby, they do run their business in accordance with their Christian principles. They like to they close their doors on Sundays. They play Christmas music, and those things are not forbidden by law, and so it's fine that Hobby Lobby wants to do that. But when there is a law that applies to them, like providing, like if they choose to offer health insurance, that that health insurance plan meets certain minimum requirements, and it's not just about contraception. There are many different requirements that if a company offers employers employer-sponsored health plans, that they have to meet these minimum requirements. When the law says that, if you choose to offer health insurance, then you have to abide by that law. Now, I would note that, you know, Hobby Lobby has framed this as sort of their being required to pay for these forms of contraception, but that's actually a mischaracterization of the law. They could choose not to offer employer-sponsored health insurance, and instead they would pay a tax, and so then their employees would go on to the exchanges established by the Affordable Care Act, and if they were lower income, they would get subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. And so Hobby Lobby has a choice about whether or not to offer insurance that would then cover these forms of contraception or to pay the tax instead. And in fact, as Justice Kagan brought out really strongly yesterday in oral argument with Hobby Lobby's lawyer, this isn't burdensome for Hobby Lobby. In fact, it would probably be cheaper for them if they chose to pay the tax instead of offering health insurance. So their sort of claim that they are being forced to either violate their religious beliefs or suffer this extraordinarily financial penalty, that's just simply wrong.
And that was, of course, Justice Sotomayor's point to Roberts, who seemed to agree. It's not called a penalty, it's called a tax. I mean, that is obviously the simple way out, and that's what the law provides. So the feeling you get here is not only is there a kind of evangelical hubris going on here, my understanding from speaking yesterday to some people from RH Reality Check is that they've done investigative journalism looking into how this case got there to the Supreme Court in the first place. And you know, Elizabeth Wider, there's this phenomenon called Supreme Court shopping, where cases are tailored to get to the Supreme Court, like the Washington, D.C. Gun case that ended up turning the Second Amendment on its head. So they were telling me yesterday that there's a real line there from the Koch brothers and funding through their front groups to the lawyers in this case. So is this a stealth way for the Koch brothers, who've been opposed to the Affordable Care Act from the beginning, to get their way using the sanctimony of religion?
Well, you know, I'm not sure about that. You know, I certainly would not. I don't question the sincere beliefs of these particular business owners.
Well, it's not so much the business owners I'm referring to. It's the how the case got to the courts and who paid its way.
It's certainly true that the plaintiffs they chose to bring the case are very sympathetic. And, you know, the justices pointed that out actually yesterday that, you know, this was a smart way to bring your case. And that's what people do when they want their, you know, you choose the best vehicle to get your argument across. And, you know, I think it might be interesting to the public to know how it got there. But frankly, that's just smart lawyering.
I see. Well, Elizabeth Wider, I thank you so much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Elizabeth Wider, who's the chief counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank law firm and action center dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution supports progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the federal courts of appeals. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.